Our weekly opera matinee brings you Donizetti from Vienna State Opera with the legendary soprano Edita Gruberova. Afternoon on 3 with Beethoven and the Borgias. Weekday afternoons on BBC Radio 3 from 1 o'clock.
And there are two more of the composing bees in Through the Night tonight at 1 o'clock. Horia Andriscu conducting the Romanian National Radio Symphony Orchestra in a recent concert of Brahms and Berlioz. It sets off with the Brahms tragic overture. The centrepiece is Berlioz's cantata, The Death of Cleopatra. And the grand finale, so to speak, is Arnold Schoenberg's very colourful orchestration of the Brahms G minor piano quartet. Schoenberg, said by some with his orchestration, to have given the world another Brahms symphony. Well, that's as may be, and that's all from 1 o'clock tonight. This is BBC Radio 3, 90 to 93 FM on digital radio, and you can also listen to us live online. Perhaps you already are. It's just gone 11:30. And now, jazz lineup with Claire Martin.
Hello and welcome. Today we talk to UK saxophonist Tim Whitehead about his passion for the art of J.M.W. Turner, which has inspired his new CD, and also his new position as the first musician to be artist in residence at the Tate Britain. From Southport's Winter Weekend Festival, we bring you some of the live set by singer and bass player Nicola Farnham, and as ever, some brand new releases hot off the shelves. Well, to start the show, saxophonist Adam Waldman is a recent graduate of the Trinity College of Music's jazz course, and his quartet, who are called Carrier's Fortet, are Jasper Hruby on bass, pianist Rob Barron, and drummer John Scott, and they've just released their second CD called Statement of Intent. Well, Adam Waldman has the critics calling him a powerful new voice in British jazz, so let's hear his composition, Philosophy of Futility. From their second release, Statement of Intent, that was Karyos Fortet and Adam Waldman's composition, Philosophy of Futility. And you can see them live on the 5th of April at the Stables in Milton Keynes. On the 8th of April, they're in Brighton at the Jazz Club at the Comedia. On the 9th, they're in South Heel Park in Bracknell. And on the 13th of April, at the Vortex in London. Kurt Weill and Bertolt Brecht's The Threepenny Opera first played on Broadway in 1933 and was later introduced to the US Hit Parade in 1956 by Louis Armstrong with his version of Mack the Knife, a popular song interpreted from the opera. A little later, in 1965, it got the Ella Fitzgerald treatment, perhaps the finest rendition of all. From the deluxe remastered two-disc digipack, that was the First Lady of Jazz, the totally incomparable Ella Fitzgerald, with her version of Mack the Knife. And that digipack was released in September last year after the BBC unearthed previously forgotten tapes of Ella sessions, recorded for them in 1965, and also a club date at Ronnie Scott's from 1974. That package also includes a DVD, so it's a real treat for all us Ella fans. Thank you. saxophonist Tim Whitehead playing there has been inspired by the paintings of J. M.W. Turner, one of Britain's most famous painters. So inspired that he's just completed the album Colour Beginnings out on Homemade Records, and we were just hearing Tower on a Hill at Sunrise. Tim, welcome to Jazz Lineup.
Hi.
Now, it's not too unusual because I've just read, I didn't know this about you, you're actually a painter as well.
Well, I wouldn't go that far, but I have been painting for a long time.
And was that why you nipped out at a gig in lunchtime and sort of went and saw the Turner stuff? Tell us how this came about.
Oh, it was years and years ago. I was doing a gig at the ICA in the Mall, and we were rehearsing for this theatre performance of The Mysterious Story of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, I believe it was. And I went to the National Gallery in my lunch break and ended up in front of View of Margate, which is a really big oil painting. And it's one of those very late Turner oils, like swirly seascapes. Margate's just a tiny little hint in somewhere in the far distance and of no real consequence in the picture. But it was extraordinary, really. And I've had the same experience in front of several of those paintings that have a similar sort of vibe. And moved me to tears, in fact. And I went back a couple of days later, just to see it again.
For another
Yes, it had the same effect on me again. And I mean, I realise now that it's because I do have a really close connection.
Deep
with the
connection,
work.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about this album, because it actually started off with you having a bad back injury that sort of laid you flat. And so tell us sort of how that happened, and obviously, are you all right now?
Yes, touch wood, I'm fine. I was away doing some gigs away from home, and I had to catch a plane and got out of bed, and my back sort of went and remained for about 3 months.
Ouch.
And during that time, I spent a lot of time lying down, and it gave me a lot of time to think about, you know, what was going well and what could be better. One of the things that I thought was that it was really, really important to do a project on this work that I'd been looking at for years and I'd been getting a really strong dialogue every time I went into the Tate or wherever I was looking at the exhibited stuff. And you're thinking, wow, you know, this music's just, it just sort of happens when I'm around this stuff. Must do something about it. And then you walk out of the gallery into the rest of your life and whoops, goes out of your head again till the next time. And so this time I thought I'd better do something about it.
So I know that you had a lot of help from the people at the Tate, because you actually became sort of artist in resident and you ended up doing sort of improvisational gigs in front of the paintings. And I quite loved the story that I read, that some people were coming around to view the work, and there you were playing away, and they were told not to disturb you. I thought that was terrific.
Well, there was another one. There's an even better one than that. Was when I was playing, there was an exhibition called Turner and the Masters in 2009 while I was there, and I was asked to do some playing for an open evening for educators, and I was performing in one of the galleries in the exhibition, and I was in full flight, and a tour party sort of collided with my gig. The tour. And so a representative of the tour guy sort of came over to me and sort of said, I'm afraid your performance is interrupting our tour. And I said, no, actually, your tour is interrupting my performance. Which was taking my cue from J.M.W. Turner, definitely.
So let's talk about the people that were helping you realise this dream, really, because I know you had access to some blue boxes. Tell us about the blue boxes that had some lovely subject matters in.
I was based at the Princeton Drawings Room, and in fact, there's a lovely lady called Julia Beaumont Jones who runs the Princeton Drawings Room, who looked after me there, and she gave me just about the best spec in the Princeton Drawings Room, which was like a big table, a big overlooking, with a whacking big window in front of it overlooking the Thames. In a massive sort of sky and everything. It was just absolutely wonderful. Wow. And I set up my keyboard and my headphones and my mixer and my tape machine recording stuff and everything. And I could work there with the headphones on. And then when I wanted to look at stuff, which was the first 3 months, I just looked at stuff, really. And I started doing some playing in the third month, but for the first 2 months, it was just every day looking through lots of stuff.
Sounds
and
like
doing
such a lovely summer, doesn't it? What an idyllic way of spending
it. It was January, actually. It was January, February.
Okay.
And it was fantastic. These boxes, these blue boxes, come to you from the storeroom.
Mm.
And they taught me how to handle the stuff. So in the end, I could handle the stuff myself. But and you open these boxes, and inside there is a little pile of priceless paintings. And they're just mounted on cardboard. There's no glass or anything like that. They're there. And
wow.
you pick them out and you look at them and glory in them.
I'm sure.
The Leverhulme Trust financed the artists in residency. I did the improvisations on the mostly on the saxophone in front of the paintings after the public had been kicked out of the galleries. And they let me loose then, you know, they let me off my leash then. And I would improvise, and the improvisations were recorded, and then I listened through to the stuff, and then I chose the things I was interested in, and then transcribed them. And I did most of the transcription actually in there at the Tate.
Tim, pick a track for us now so we can hear some of this work.
I think the one that I'm going to pick is page 3, Sky Sketchbook page 3. I think it's track number 10. Reason being, because the Sky Sketchbook was one of the most amazing things that I saw when I was there. One of the curators there, Nicola Morby, who first introduced me to the Tate, she asked me if I'd seen this, and I said no, and she had it waiting for me one morning, and I came up and looked at it, and it's just packed full of these sky studies, these really fast but incredibly accurate and beautiful studies that have got fantastic movement and truth, you know. Real truth. Well, as soon as you look at them, you go, you know what kind of a cloud form, you know exactly what he was looking at, you know. But more than that, really. So page 3, Sky Sketchbooks, it's a bit of a favourite.
Sky Sketchbook from Tim Whitehead's Colour Beginnings album, and I'm currently talking to Tim. Tim, you've also been shortlisted for a Composer Award that I think that BBC Radio 3 are involved with. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, it's the British Composers Awards that is run by British Association of Composers and Songwriters, BASCA, and BBC and Performing Rights Society. Yeah, I was shortlisted for that.
So how long does the artist in residence actually sort of go on for? And are you sort of missing going there every day? And did it become a real part of your life being around this marvellous work?
I was just saying to my pal, Roy Wright, who's a painter and one of my best pals, we meet regularly in different places. Sometimes Richmond Park, I take my dog for a walk there. And I was saying how much I'm missing it more now than I was the year after I finished doing it. I mean, I finished doing it at the end of 2009. 2010, I don't know why I didn't miss it so much, but this year I've been... I've been back a few times this year, and in fact I'm going to go there after I've finished this interview. I'm going because there's a watercolour exhibition on which is a fantastic, you know, stretching across right up to the present day from before Turner's time, you know, so there's lots of amazing stuff in there.
Tell us about the wonderful musicians that you've got on Colour Beginnings. I see Patrick Bettison's on there. I'm glad he's really a face from the past and really appearing on lots of great recordings. So he's obviously back in the forefront of British jazz, which is terrific.
Yeah, well, I worked with Patrick when he was, before he left the UK to go to live in the States. Mm. And I worked with him in my band then. And when he was back, I didn't miss an opportunity to get to work with him again. Mm. And yes, it's lovely. He's a very natural, gifted musician, very relaxed, and you know, he is a great improviser, great soloist. Mm. So I feel that when you're turning out with a quartet, every single member needs to be a leader in a sense. Mm. You know, you can't, you know, everyone needs to be able to pick it up and run with it, really. And he certainly can. So yeah, he's wonderful.
And then you've got Liam Noble.
Yeah, Liam, well, I've been working with Liam now since 1999, I think, was the first time we worked together. Well, no, it wasn't the first time we worked together, but it was the first time that we recorded an album called Personal Standards. Mm. I asked him to do it because I was recording tunes that were personal standards for me, you know, but like kind of like lots of soul tunes and things like that mm. I really love. And, you know, I grew up with, I mean, God, I grew up in Liverpool. So if you don't know about soul music and you grew up in Liverpool, there's something very wrong with you. And there's lots of things I love, like, you know, What's Going On, you know, stuff like that.
Mm. He likes all that as well, though. He likes all that.
He does. But the thing about him is that he is his own man, and which is why I wanted somebody like that to do it. I didn't want somebody to try and get themselves into a kind of to try and play the idiom, as it were. I wanted somebody to play from where they are that music, and also somebody who has got great respect for music, which he has. And he did it. He really, really did it on that album.
Mm. And Milo Fell and Ollie Hayhurst complete that band.
Yes.
And you've got a big gig coming up with Kenny Wheeler at the Purserum. Will they be there, or is that a different lineup and different music altogether?
No, it's the same lineup. Patrick Bettison on bass, same guys.
With Kenny Wheeler.
I wrote some music a while ago for a commission for the Tynmouth Festival. It was all music to be with, you know, sextet plus choir, and Pete Churchill was on it, and there was a tune called A Thing of Beauty, which is the John Keats poem, and which I set to music because it was Tynmouth. He spent some time in Tynmouth. They wanted me to write some things about Tynmouth, and so I wrote this thing, and he has a choir, as you probably know, a wonderful choir,
yes,
which comprising of jazz singers and people from around the jazz world, really. And he was doing a gig. He asked me for the music so that he could get it into the repertoire, so I gave it to him. And then at Christmas he was doing a gig with them, and I went along and played a little solo spot in the middle of my own tune. And Kenny was there because there were about two or three tunes of his in the repertoire as well.
Mm.
And so afterwards we had a little chat, and Kenny said it'd be really nice to have a play sometime. And so when that gig came up, I thought, aha.
There's your chance.
Yeah.
Well, let's finish with another piece from Colour Beginnings, and something that I'd never heard you do before. You've been doing it for years, but actually really singing out and singing lines. And is this something that's new to you, or have I just missed?
No. I can remember you and me doing gigs at the World's End pub in Finsbury Park many, many years ago.
Yes,
and I never did it there. No. Well, when I started, I used to sing years ago when I first started playing in bands and things like that. And I always sing. I mean, I'm singing all the time. When I'm writing stuff, I'm singing. I'm singing the parts. And it just so happens that when I was doing the improvisations, I got to this stuff in the Sky sketchbook, and I'd already been kind of completely bowled over by it several times. And I was going from one to another, and I'd done about three improvisations, and I got to this one, and I saw this great big open sky and this fantastic, you know, just spatial thing. And I just couldn't play anything. Hmm. I'd played every, you know, and I just started singing because that's the only thing to do in response to
it. I think it really,
you know,
suits it, though. It's absolutely, it's so atmospheric, and it's really from the heart. You can tell it's just, you're wailing, and it's really effective.
Yeah, that's what it's about. And the thing is that, the thing about Turner is that he has that effect on people. And he has that effect on people because it's of the bigness of the vision of the guy, you know. And it's no accident that there's a Turner Prize and all that sort of stuff, because the guy is known as a great landscape painter, but in what he put into his art was a kind of sensibility which was much bigger than just like reproducing nature or stuff. He thought of himself, he was nature. You know those photographs that you've seen of surfers where you see the wave from the inside?
Yes, yeah.
And you see them in some of his paintings. You know, at the time people sort of said the man's getting carried away, because people didn't generally have a sensibility to that, you know.
Well, Tim, thank you ever so much for talking about this project. It's a fantastic album.
Thank you.
And we're going to play that track now where you're really wailing. So so good luck with it. And here we go with Thanet Skies. This is Jazz Lineup on BBC Radio 3 with me, Claire Martin, playing Tim Whitehead from his new CD, Colour Beginnings, and that was Thanet Skies. You can see Tim on July the 25th, the gig we were just mentioning, at the Purcell Room with the great Kenny Wheeler. He's in Wakefield on the 1st of April at the Jazz Club. On the 11th of May, he's playing the Pizza Express in Dean Street, Soho, and on the 23rd of May at Warwick Arts Centre. North London-based saxophonist John Martin has released his debut CD with his quartet, and it's out now on the Fire label. And indeed, John will be a guest on Jazz Lineup in a couple of weeks. Let's hear him now on the track Looking Up. ¶¶ Looking Up, and that was John Martin on saxophone with John Joe Grisdale on piano, Tim Fairhill on the double bass and Andy Ball on the drums. And you can see them playing tomorrow night at the Jazz Café Posk in London. This is Jazz Lineup on BBC Radio 3 with me, Claire Martin. All the discs you hear are listed on our website on Radio 3, and you can hear all or part of this programme at your leisure for the next 7 days on our Listen Again feature, again by going to our website. Our concert set this week spotlights on Sheffield, as bassist and vocalist Nicola Farnham resides there, although her true hometown much further south is Market Lavington. Jazz Lineup recorded her in concert at the recent Jazz on a Winter's Weekend in Southport. Nicola's band are Jim Corey on saxophone, Andy Cholerton on piano, Phil Johnson on drums, and Anthony Omashir on guitar. Before the concert, Jazz Lineup asked Nicola side stage at the festival about the fact that she sings melody yet plays harmony on the bass. We asked her to tell us about that.
I was initially trained on the cello, which means the double bass to me is an instrument that I'm used to finding notes in my left hand, you know, in that kind of way. To be truthful, when I decided I wanted to sing and play bass, because I wanted to be an instrumentalist as well as a, you know, musician as well as a singer, I wanted to have that control. I actually did cluelessly start off by just harmonizing my vocals in this way that I really didn't, you know, I knew that much because I had some facility on the bass and I knew the tunes. But it was only when somebody said, well, you've got to listen to some bass players like Paul Chambers, and we had this swing thing, because classical obviously is so different.
And we put it to her that she plays originals in the set. How does she approach her writing?
I sometimes come up with bass-like lines and then put a melody onto the top, and then but sometimes I sit at the piano. But always, if I've worked at the piano and I come onto the bass, it's always quite important for me to find the bass in the song. So it does really feature quite a lot.
And she told us about the band.
Jim Corey, he's from London, but he lives in Leeds. He's actually touring with Jamiroquai at the moment, but he's also obviously a fantastic jazz saxophonist. He's a teacher. And Tony is a guitarist that I met years ago when he was just like, I mean, he's young, Tony, but he was like about 14. I was at Isle of Man Jazz Festival, and he was there with his dad, because his dad's in the Chicago Teddy Bears. And so he started off at a young age, and Tony is just brilliant. It just oozes out of him. And Andy, that's Tony Ormishaw. And Andy Cholerton, piano player, he's again somebody that just oozes out. I do lots of gigs like as a duo with Andy. And Phil Johnson, the drummer, he's my partner, and we've been together for many years now. We met on a cruise ship when I was depping in a band, and he swings. And for me, it's great to have somebody who's just there all the time so I can swing along with.
And her set begins with The Song Is You, Nicola Farnham in concert.
How can I let it go? How can I let you know? How can I let you know the song my heart would sing? A beautiful melody of love and youth and spring. The words are sweet, the song is true. The song is you. I am music when I look at you, a beautiful theme from every dream I ever knew. Down deep in my heart, I hear it play. I feel it start and fade away. I am music when I touch your hand, a beautiful melody from some enchanted land. Down deep in my heart, I hear it say, is this the day? I alone have heard this lovely strain. I alone have heard this great refrain. beautiful thing from every dream I ever knew. Down deep in my heart, I hear it play. I feel it start, then fade away. I am music when I touch your hand. A beautiful melody from some enchanted land. Down deep in my heart, I hear it say, is this the day? Inside of me, how can I let it go? How can I let you know? How can I let you know that all my heart would be a beautiful melody of love and you to dream? The words are true, the song is sweet, the song is you. Oh, oh, the song is sweet, the words are true.
Jerome, he was a good one.
Farnham in concert at the recent Jazz on a Winter's Weekend in Southport.
This one isn't too loud. It's not a ballad, but it's one of mine. Again. It's called Imaginary Bliss. Take it away, maestro. Thank you.
Solos there. These guys have actually never heard that song before, just then, really. So, you know, that's the massively wonderful thing about jazz, isn't it? One, a two, oh, a two, three, a four. Beautiful friendship, it ended a moment ago. This is the end of a beautiful friendship. I know, 'cause your eyes told me so. Just the beginning. gorgeous. This is the end of a beautiful friendship. It ended a moment ago. This is the end of a beautiful friendship. I know, 'cause your eyes told me so. Band again. Thanks.
Nicola Farnon on bass and vocals singing Beautiful Friendship with her band of Jim Corey on saxophone, Andy Cholerton on piano, Phil Johnson on drums, and Anthony Omishere on the guitar. And that was recorded in February at the Southport Jazz on a winter's weekend. Look out for Nicola on the 25th of March as she is at Shire Oaks Inn in Westgate, and that's in Worksop, and she's with her quartet. On the 27th, she's at the Showroom in Paternoster Row in Sheffield, and on the 31st of March, she's back in Sheffield with her trio at the Cubanum Trippet Lane, and I do hope you'll go and support her. This is Jazz Lineup on BBC Radio 3 with me, Claire Martin. Well, there's just time for one more disc today before we end. Meadow consists of three musicians, all closely associated with the legendary ECM label. Norwegians Tor Brunberg on bass and Thomas Stronen on drums, plus veteran British pianist John Taylor, make up the trio. And they've just released their new CD, Blissful Ignorance, on Edition Records. They recorded in Norway at the famous Rainbow Studios, and all the performances are about conversation and interaction. Let's hear the tune that gave the name to the trio. This is Meadow. Magnificent playing from Meadow, who are John Taylor on piano, Tor Brunberg on saxophone and Thomas Stronan on drums. And that CD, entitled Blissful Ignorance, is out now on the Cardiff-based label Edition Records, run by pianist and composer Dave Stapleton, who must be very pleased to have this modern classic on his label. Well, that's it for this week. Next week, join me for an all-CD edition of Jazz Lineup, playing as many spring releases as I can in 90 minutes. For Monday night's Jazz on 3, Jez Nelson presents a concert by Swiss-born trombonist Samuel Blazer and his quartet, featuring the New York downtown guitarist Mark Ducrey. Till next week, from me, Claire Martin. Bye-bye.
Hello, I'm John Shea, and welcome to another musical selection to keep you company through the night here on BBC Radio 3. The concert in this part of the programme comes from the Romanian National Radio Orchestra and its conductor Horia Andreescu. Ruxandra Donoza joins them in just over 10 minutes to sing Berlioz's extraordinary depiction of the death of the Egyptian Queen Cleopatra, and that's framed by Brahms, the Schoenberg orchestration of his first piano quartet, and to begin, Brahms unaided. It's hard to know what to make of the title of his tragic overture. Was this just the other mask, complementing the hijinks of his academic festival overture, which appeared in the same year, 1881, or was it something more?
Thank you.
The mystery of Brahms' tragic overture continues to the end, upbeat but still in D minor, despite the major key excursions en route. Brahms doesn't seem to have had any particular tragedy in mind, incidentally, although the piece may have been part of a planned score for Goethe's Faust. Well, Berlioz is next, who had to try five times before he won the Prix de Rome. Attempt number four was this extraordinary account of the death of Cleopatra. Joining Horia Andreescu and the Romanian National Radio Orchestra, the mezzo-soprano Ruxandra Donoza.
Thank you. Oh, Thank you.